But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here with co-host, producer, and friend Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. So we're deep into the beginning of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious, are you the guy that wakes up in the morning and likes an overcast, cooler day, or waking up to a day that's 80 degrees at 7 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, B. I like sun, you know. I like everything I like to do outside requires it, you know. So, not requires it, but, you know, yeah, it's, I like the sun. I like beach days. I like golf days. I like, pleasant vitamin D days, you know, that kind of thing.
So I forgot to talk about this, but months and months ago, in March, I guess it was, Barry Manilow sponsored Playing with Fire.
He did, I remember. Yeah.
He was coming to the Nassau Coliseum. He was coming to UBS Arena,
right?
But he ended up having some residual health issues.
Yeah, yeah.
And he played the end of June.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a bunch of our listeners go, and got a lot of really nice feedback of how appreciative they were that we were able to make things happen. There were some people that had to drop out that had previously won because
scheduling. Yeah,
yeah. And because of that, there was one couple, and I don't have the name in front of me, but it was their wife's birthday.
Oh, wow.
And so their Saturday night was all about going to see Barry Manilow, going out for a nice dinner. But everybody was very, very appreciative. We had one listener who's 88 and her third husband is 92, but she's done with finding new husbands. She's satisfied.
At 88, you know, I mean, you should be.
But it was.
I don't think they give you a marriage license. They give you like a learner's permit or something after, you know, your third one.
That's very funny. But, you know, as we age, life becomes a little more difficult. So,
yeah.
First of all, the technology of getting tickets to people. Thank God that the nice people over at UBS Arena.
Uh-huh.
I work with Erin Narigian, who's the marketing person, but she made arrangements that we could submit names so people could pick their tickets up at the box office at Will Call, because it was a problem.
Yeah.
But so we got through that, and then I heard the story of the 88-year-old and 92-year-old couple,
uh-huh.
and they were talking about parking, and my heart went out, and I was going to help them with parking, but then I realized I can't give them Will Call to get the car
in
the parking lot.
Yeah.
So I did not move forward with that, but you know, everything is a little bit of a difficulty. And fortunately, it was warm weather, because I don't know if you've been to UBS Arena.
I have not.
It's at Belmont Park.
Yeah, yeah.
And the train station and the general parking is in the same area. And it really is, no exaggeration, about a 15-minute walk.
Uh-huh.
So on a nice spring day, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
They do provide
shuttles
to move the people around, but then you still have to wait to get on the shuttle. So many people walk, and again, on a nice spring day, it's fun, but think about when it's raining. Think about if it's a windy day and it's raining.
Yeah, or cold, you know.
And if it's cold, yeah. So I felt really bad that we couldn't do anything for the couple.
Yeah.
I guess people end up having if they have the means, they can Uber or whatever.
Sure.
But even Ubering is difficult. This is not a talk bad about UBS Arena. The arena is beautiful. It's just parking is a little tough.
Yeah, yeah.
But we went to a show. This is a funny quick story. I think it was Sebastian Maniscalco played a couple of summers ago. And Kerry was away in Ireland. And she was flying in that night or that afternoon.
Yeah.
And she goes, I'm going to make that show. So I drove to UBS in her car. She was flying in with her daughter. So her daughter ended. Oh, I guess I picked them up at the airport. That's the way it played out.
Right.
I picked them up at the airport in her car. We drove to UBS. We got out, and Kerry's daughter drove the car home. and we met friends of ours who had Ubered there.
Right.
But again, the Uber pickup is in the same area as the train, the shuttle. So Carrie lives on the South Shore. So we sit next to our friends. The show is all wonderful. We walk to the Uber pickup area. And all we want to do is get on the Cross Island going south. No. Doesn't work that way.
Can't do it.
We had to go north to go south. So we got on the Cross Island going north, got to go to the Grand Central Parkway, take that to, I guess it was the Cross Island, or to the Meadowbrook, actually.
Right.
I guess we got on the Northern State, took that to the Meadowbrook.
How come you couldn't go south?
The way the
exit?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you could go one exit and then do the loop-de-loop and come back the other way. No?
Yeah, what's the fancy way of saying exit? It escapes me at the moment, but...
I'm shocked.
Yeah, go figure. Stu's confused. Egress.
Egress. Look at you.
The egress from the arena.
Isn't that a bird?
That's true, too. But yeah, we had to go. It was really crazy because we had to go quite a distance north again to go... south.
Yeah, yeah.
But at any rate, so, you know, I wanted to help those people out. But no matter what I would have offered, it would have been difficult because they couldn't have gotten to their Uber. But all I know is the people that went really, really, really had a good time. There was another couple that I thought would have been worthy of tackling the technology and accepting the parking voucher to park. Because they have, if like you're a season ticket holder, they have diamond, they have silver,
preferred,
ruby, and it's right there. I would have gotten them a pass, but then the woman said her husband has some mobility issues. And even once you get into the building, if you magically got placed in the building, you still got a lot of walking to do. So,
To go to a concert at 92, I'm impressed. I mean, you know, I can't picture myself screaming Freebird at a Lynyrd Skynyrd concert, you know, at 90 years old. Oh, God. If I make 90, that's probably a fantasy.
Well, again, everything's relative. At any rate, so Barry Manilow did have the concert. I was on pins and needles, to be honest, that it was going to actually happen. But about a week before, he was playing some gigs in London.
Uh-huh.
Those went off fine. And then the night before, he was playing in Pennsylvania, and that went off. So I assumed that everything was going to be good. But again, Barry had some vocal cord issues or throat issues. But now move forward, this past week, John Bon Jovi was back on stage performing
that.
With Bon Jovi.
He was having some vocal things,
yes,
right?
Yes. Obviously, Bon Jovi's gone through some changes in the past. Richie Sambora, his longtime guitar player,
is gone.
Disappeared.
He's got that guy Phil X now.
Yes, which is
great player.
Very interesting that you brought that up. But at any rate, so Richie Sambora disappeared for whatever reason. He had family issues. And the story goes that supposedly he just didn't show up to a gig on a tour, and that was it.
That's a problem.
So I guess there was some bad blood. There was recently a documentary about Bon Jovi, and they get into it. Richie's on it and also John. Not together, but supposedly, again, the rumor mill is that they actually watched the documentary together.
Oh, yeah.
They sort of put aside their issues. But I guess things change in life. You know, the band originally was four members, I believe, and everybody had a 25% share. And, you know, things change when that's a lot of money. And then if you can hire somebody that's per diem and gets even $100,000 for a tour... you know, it's cheaper.
Yeah, but, it becomes a business, you know. When you're 18 or 19, it's all fun and games, you know. I mean, when you're 35, it changes.
So you'll get a kick out of this. So the show, he's 9 shows at the Garden, and then they're going to play Wembley Stadium in London.
London, yeah.
And so far, there's no other dates. He's pacing himself so that it's like over a 3-week period, and it's a little bit of rest or whatever. But he starts the concert with A Little Help from My Friends, the Beatles, and he does it as a cover. He does it in the arrangement of Joe Cocker, which is definitely different than the Beatles version. And, you know, what would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me?
Yeah.
Which was really cool. He was like bearing his soul.
Yeah.
And then there was some critique said, you know, go figure, he sang the song out of key. But it was interesting. It was a 7:30 time for the show. It actually started at 7:45 very promptly.
Uh-huh.
It was over at 9:45. So 2-hour set. You know, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm the average Joe, he sounded fine.
Yeah.
It was interesting. He had the two other original members with him, Tico Torres, who plays
bass.
drums right. And then David Byron, who's the organist.
Uh-huh.
And then I guess there's a bass player that's been on with them. And then there's a couple of official members that have garnered a membership based on duration with the band or whatever.
Yeah.
And there was Phil X. Now, Phil X was just here playing with a band called Triumph. You might know of them.
Yeah, sure.
I would have gone just because of the craziness of it. I wasn't really, though, aware that he was on the Triumph tour, because that had to be also.
Did they play the beach?
They played the beach,
really? I didn't know that. I would have gone to that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wish you knew, because nobody else did. But, that's pretty cool. That's pretty significant. That's a band that hadn't been together for like 10
forever.
Years or more or whatever.
Yeah.
They did a small tour. But at the same time, that was sort of when the rehearsals, I guess, for the Bon Jovi gigs were.
Uh-huh.
But somehow he came off of one into the other. He's got a real presence. It's also interesting.
He's a phenomenal player, too.
Yeah. And
he's Greek because, you know, I think X is, I think his last name begins with X.
Oh.
And there's probably no other culture in the world that has.
But it's interesting, these different replacement players that are very good in their own.
Yeah.
Phil X, and then Motley Crue has John Five.
Johnny Five, another great player, man. Really good.
So, and I learned something this week that, and now I'll forget what it was, but Steve Vai,
mm-hmm.
he played with David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
We talked about David Lee Roth recently, and I had no idea that.
They did that one album, Eat 'Em and Smile.
Yeah, that I think had
Yankee Rose, and yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, he played with a couple of people. He played with Whitesnake.
Yes.
He played with Alcatraz.
Yeah, I just I didn't know.
Yeah.
But what was interesting is in the day, Richie Sambora was always to John Bon Jovi's right. And I've been very, very lucky in my life. I got to see Bon Jovi side stage twice.
Yeah.
And the one time was with Kerry and was standing side stage. It was really funny because we thought we were standing next to Billy Ray Cyrus, because there was this guy down in Florida that looked just like Billy Ray Cyrus.
Yeah.
And if you played into it, he would tell you that he was, but he wasn't. But at any rate, Richie Sambora comes over and gives Kerry a little kiss. But he always played on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
If you were on the stage looking out on the right, now they have Phil X on the left side. I don't know if that's intentional or he needs a little more room.
No idea.
But Phil X is really out there, very.
Oh yeah, he's rock and roll, hardcore, you know, through and through, and a great player. I mean,
if you had to give the audience a description, he's almost looks like Robert Plant with that curly
long curly hair,
golden blonde hair.
Yeah. He's an animated character too. I've seen him interviewed. He's kind of an interesting guy to listen to, you know, smart, you know, and engaged. You know, you can tell he's not a drug-addled, you know, lunatic. I mean, you know, you can't get to that level, you know, and not be serious. You know, he's a serious player.
So it's interesting. I mentioned David Lee Roth, and I saw him, and I see a lot of reels on social media, and he's definitely not the person he was before, and it's sort of the same instinct within with John Bon Jovi. These guys need to be on stage.
Yeah.
And it really seemed very heartfelt when John Bon Jovi was talking about that he was there and he could see his friends in the audience and family. And, you know, it was a big deal because he really didn't really know if he would ever be singing again.
Sure,
and it remains to be seen how heavy he can perform and what the future of Bon Jovi is.
Yeah.
But David Lee Roth is the same thing. He's out there touring smaller venues, like 2,500 seat venues. Again, the Garden, I guess, is like 20,000. So that's a pretty big thing. And also, he could have done, John Bon Jovi could have played MetLife. I guess with FIFA around, it might have been a problem this time of year. But that's 100,000 seats at one time. So this was, the Garden was a little more intimate. It had a lot of meaning for him or whatever. But the women were out of control for him.
Well, he's a pretty boy, you know.
And again, it was just really, really nice. And David Lee Roth, I saw in a smaller venue, the Paramount here in Huntington, holds like 2,500, sold out.
Uh-huh.
But, how do you describe David Lee Roth in his prime? He always would vocalize.
He's more of a showman than a singer.
Yes, but he would vocalize, and then he would always have these yelps and stuff. Like, I don't know how you would say it. It's not lyrics. It's just...
He was a showman.
So that's all he does now. He sings a little bit. He's got a backup band of five men, which was interesting because also with John Bon Jovi, all the members of the band, there's six members now, they all join in the background and help fill in the void.
Sure.
But still, kudos to John Bon Jovi for going out there.
Yeah.
David Lee Roth's a different story. He gets it done. He's a storyteller.
Yeah.
So he gets away with whatever inadequacies he has by just his showmanship, telling stories and sort of moderating the vocals of his backup band of backup singers.
To me, David Lee Roth is maybe one of the luckiest guys in rock and roll. He just happened to fall upon one of the greatest guitar players ever. You know what I mean? Which carried him through. And not to diminish what he contributed to the band. I mean, he was certainly a competent singer, but a showman more than that. He's not going to be remembered for his vocals. It's just his stage presence.
It's too bad everybody.
But now it's now he's kind of like he's trending towards that cartoon stage where you become kind of a caricature.
Very much so. But it's too bad that everybody didn't play nice in the sandbox because it would be pretty cool to see David Lee Roth on stage with Sammy Hagar. You got the bass player problem because you got Wolfgang, which is Eddie Van Halen's son. And you got Michael Anthony, I think his name is. The original. So there's all sorts of issues, but it would be pretty cool to have sort of like a tribute to Van Halen. But at any rate, a lot of music going around at the moment, so...
Yeah, no, it's funny. I don't really go to too many shows because I don't have the patience to sit through it, But I'll go to a couple, and I always remind myself of how much fun it is when you get there, It's the whole, do I want to go? Now I got to get in the car. I got to drive all the way. I got to park, .
Well, that's so funny you say that because Bon Jovi was Monday night, I think it was, at the Garden. 7:45 start, 9:45 off the stage, on the train by 10:08, and home. I went to Jones Beach to see Lindsay Sterling. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She's an electronic violinist. Kerry had seen her years ago down in Florida. There was a music festival called Sunfest. And she was all about just being a electronic violinist.
Right.
That's what I went thinking of. Now, the show was not a sellout. Usually she's the opening act for another.
It's hard to.
And I think sometimes she's played with a band. I don't know if you've heard of Evanescence, which Lindsay something.
Know the name.
At any rate, but it was at Jones Beach, and there was two other electronic performers on. And then Lindsay Sterling came on. She came on at like 9:15. The joke of everything, that was just about when the Bon Jovi concert was over. So it was really interesting time-wise to like begin the concert because we didn't see the opening act. We just went for the headliner. And she was phenomenal. But what she brings to the table today is she's an acrobatist. She does the type of performance... with acrobatics like Pink does with the
the twirling and the trapezes and all
that
stuff.
Playing the violin.
Yeah, yeah.
She's running around the stage. The violin is actually connected to her neck in some capacity when she wants it to be. But she was upside down. She was split-legged, holding onto a trapeze by her feet.
Really?
She was just hanging on with her leg over the trapeze. It was just out of control. But the coolest part of the whole evening was apparently there were two young Asian kids holding a sign that said, "Can I perform? Can we perform with you? Can we perform with you?" And she saw it from the stage, and she invited them up. She goes, "We're going to finish one more song, and then I'd like to get them up here." These two young kids get up. One was six, one was seven.
Mm-hmm.
They come on stage. They sort of had outfits.
Oh, yeah.
They had traditional violins or violas or whatever, not, you know, like an electronic one.
Yeah.
They get on stage. They bring over two microphones for them to be heard, their instruments. She asks the drummer to count them down or count them. I don't know. Count them in.
Yeah.
So he's doing the, one, two, three.
Yeah.
They start up. She's all over it herself, Lindsey Stirling, and she has her guitar player join in.
Uh-huh.
And they did this song because apparently they all knew it, and I really believe this was totally on the fly.
Uh-huh.
There was no rehearsal. They had no idea that they would know what song
they were doing.
And they did a three-minute song that was like, oh, my God.
Nice.
6 and 7 years old. Nice. And with the composure, you know, how many times do you see an artist will bring a kid off on stage or whatever, and all they're doing is hugging and this. This was like, I just couldn't believe that it could just happen like that.
Yeah, somebody had a tiger mom, you know. It's Asian kids. I saw a video of an Asian kid. I think he was Chinese, and he did. He was playing some complicated song. I don't know, it might have been a Steve Vai tune or something. But this kid, he couldn't have been more than 7 or 8 years old. I'm like, geez, I wish I was as good as this kid, you know? It's phenomenal. Some people are just born with a gift, you know? Steve Vai's a perfect example. I mean, you know, his fingers are, you know, 2 feet long, and, you know, he's just built for the instrument. But, you know, as much time as he put in, I know other guys who have put similar time into the instrument, and, you know, they don't play like he plays, you know? It's just something inside, you know, that you're kind of born with, I think, that, you know, you're lucky enough to have it, and then, you know, you nurture that gift. You know, that's the other half of it. You got to make sure you do that. But, it's amazing. I mean, when I watch some of these guys play, I want to burn every guitar I own, you know, and just throw it in the fireplace. What's the point, you know? But again, you know, music is, it was an interesting conversation. You remember who was the guitar player in, what's the grunge band? The guy that killed himself. He was married to Courtney Love.
Nirvana, Kurt Cobain.
Kurt Cobain. So somebody asked Steve Vai if he thought Kurt Cobain was a great guitar player. Now, Kurt Cobain was not a great guitar player. I'm probably better than Kurt Cobain was. You know, he was just a banger, you know. And not taking anything away from him, but, you know, he's not a great guitar player. And Steve said, well, he goes, look, the guy was able to connect to millions of his fans through his instrument. That, to me, makes him a great guitar player, you know, which I thought was a very classy answer coming from a guy who's a great guitar player. Anyway, but that's the thing. I mean, you know, music, it's not, you know, at some point there's, you know, you're in competition with all these other people, your idols and stuff, and you're trying to emulate them, this, that, and the other thing. At the end of the day, you realize that I just want to be able to say what I want to say with whatever talent I may or may not have through my guitar, you know. And I'll never be able to play like Satriani or Vai. I don't have the time, the effort, the inclination to practice the whole thing, you know. But I can make some music, and I can express myself through that instrument, which is kind of fun.
So this is a little advanced, but I was very intrigued by the whole John Bon Jovi thing, and I was actually listening to an interview with Phil X. And he said one of the things that they liked about his instrumentation was the way he either tune the guitar or something. There's different ways of...
Yeah, I have open tunings. You can do that, yeah.
So they, again, I guess their style and some of it's traditional, and then I guess sometimes artists sort of develop their own thing. I mean, Eddie Van Halen...
Oh, he's a ridiculous player. you know, nobody plays like him. And, you know, that's the thing about, you know, when you get to that level, I mean, nobody plays like Steve. Nobody plays like Satriani. They have their own voice in the instrument, which is unique, you know. I once read there are like 20 guitar players in the whole world where as soon as you, I mean, I hear one note and I can tell you who it is. You know, I mean, I'll give you a great example. Carlos Santana. You know who he is right away, but you know, as soon as you hear a solo or something, you know it's him because he, you know, he stays in that Dorian mode and whatever, you know. But the bottom line is, you know, Eric Clapton, you know him right away. Steve Vai, I can tell you, Steve plays three notes, I can tell you it's him, you know. So it's these people have discovered their true voice, you know.
And just like you said, Carlos Santana, again, I must sound crazy, but I got to see Santana recently. It was the Doobie Brothers opening for Santana down at the beach.
Yeah.
And Carlos Santana is like 80-something years old or whatever. Yeah. And I guess 82 years old. You get a little tired standing around. So they put multiple chairs on the stage, like high-top chairs.
Yeah.
And he sort of leans against it while he plays. Carlos Santana has never been somebody that does vocals.
No.
So there's always different people.
Thank God.
I have some friends that own a vodka company called Raka Vaka, and they're working with the singer, one of the singers, I think his name's Andy Garcia, and they were very nice to host me at the show and go backstage.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that Carlos's wife is a drummer.
Uh-huh.
And she can bang these skins. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see her on stage, she looks like a monster.
Really?
And then you see her off stage, she's in, you know, designer jeans and high heel shoes. And she's, you know, just very petite. But when you see from the audience,
yeah, they look bigger than life, you know.
Yeah. And then another cool thing is his son was there. His son plays organ for the band.
Oh, yeah.
So it's... it's just really, really cool. And Santana, that show was sold out. I mean, you got two headline-capable bands,
Santana and
the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah, that's it.
Doobie Brothers opened up, so it was, they always do a great, great set, but this was really compact because there was no room for filler.
Right.
And then afterwards, I found out that Santana's actually has a residency in Las Vegas.
Does he?
But... again, so much incredible music here on Long Island at the moment.
Yeah, he came into Carlos is another guy who was in right place, right time. I mean, that San Francisco thing was going on. He got invited to Woodstock. If you see his solo in Woodstock, it's terrible, you know? I mean, have you ever taken a lesson, you know, kind of thing? I'm looking at, you know? But he had that sound. It was that Latin thing that he was the first to do it, and you know, he got better and better and better as a player, you know, but he still owns that genre. I mean, that's the, you know, as soon as I hear two notes, I know it's him, you know. He's just got that thing.
You say that and it echoes in my ears.
You can hear it, right? Yeah. Hey, listen, we've been on music for a while. I do have to do a shout out. You know, my granddaughter's softball team, the 10 and under group, won their district.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a big deal, right? And then they went to the sectionals, and they won their first game in the sectionals, and then they got killed the second game, and they lost the heartbreaker in the third one, so their season's over. But shout out to these little girls, man. They were just toughing it out all year, and they had some great, great games, a good run. So congratulations to the Riverhead 10 and under group. And, it was just so much fun to watch them play, you know. I get a kick out of... you know, watching kids play sports, you know, it's just, even
well,
if it's
interesting
not
to watch development of it.
Yeah.
I remember when I first met Kerry and her son was probably like 6 years old or whatever, you know, he would throw a ball forward, but it never would go forward.
Not
when
up
he,
in the air,
when
so.
He would go to throw it forward, it went backwards, you know, and then going forward to the point where he was pitching and struck out the side, you know. I mean, so you see the evolution.
Oh,
then
sure.
I have a friend down in Florida. He wanted his kid to play baseball so bad, you know, and it was like pack ball, you know, the ball went hit and everybody would go chasing it, whatever. But I just
hilarious.
Always remember Shane like sitting in the outfield, like counting the blades of grass.
Yeah,
Shane, you got to get up. Yeah. Well, I'm comfortable where I am.
Yeah, they're picking the dandelions and stuff, you know. So I went to a restaurant the other night. Excuse me, I haven't been to in a while. called Flora. Have you been there?
It sounds very familiar.
It's in that
familiar.
Little shopping center right on the north side of Jericho Turnpike at the junction of 135 Seaford Oyster Bay Expressway. It's right across from Rare, 650.
Yes.
Anyway,
yes.
There's a little kind of sideways shopping center in it. It's not parallel to the road. It's perpendicular to the road, so it's kind of hard to see. But it's a very small space. They do basically pizza and pasta and a couple of entrees. But it's very, very good. I went there after the softball game when the girls were in. They were playing in Woodbury Field there. There's a complex.
I was going to ask how you were so west when the team is so east.
Yeah, yeah. So I took my daughter and her husband and the two grandkids and Val. We all went over to Florida after the game, you know. And I got to tell you, they've been there now a couple of years. I haven't been there in at least a year, year and a half. And it's really good. They just do excellent pastas. I had a cacio pepe that was textbook good. Trying to think. My grandson had some kind of pizza and Harley had a pasta. I don't remember what she had. But everything is just, it's done so well there. If you get a chance, you got to stop in. And you got to make a reservation. There's probably only about 35 seats in the whole place. It's really small. 40 seats maybe, cramming them in. But great place. And I think they opened a second one in Port Washington, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a testament to their, what they're doing in the kitchen there. And the wine list is really nice. They have some interesting choices. I just had a great meal there and look forward to going back sometime pretty soon.
Interesting. Kerry had some friends in from out of town. We went to see Bon Jovi with them, and they ate at a steakhouse in the city that I had never heard of before, Carver Steak. Did you ever hear that?
No, I don't know.
They said it was the best steak they ever had. They're from Kentucky.
You know, that whole sentence just, and that irritates me, but it's kind of like, when I hear that, it's oh, yeah, you got to go to Brian and Cooper because their steaks are better than Rare 650, who isn't as good as Prime, but it's almost as good as Opus, but they all buy the same meat. It's the same thing. It's maybe Brian and Cooper's a little different because they age on premise, but they're all buying from the same guy. It's the same
stuff. Well, isn't it some of the prep? I mean, what is it? Ruth's Chris is the thing.
Careful
with the butter.
There, Ruth's.
they
drown it in butter.
Right. And then even Capital Grill, I think they do a little butter on the plate before they place the steak. But they do different rubs on it. I know they do like a coffee rub and this and a Cajun rub or whatever.
Yeah, I get all of that. But the bottom line is the steak's the steak. I mean, they're all buying Prime. And Prime's been kind of dumbed down because the demand has been so high. They don't have that many prime cows, so they kind of made, good choice prime.
But I have to ask you this. The guest that was from out of town, we went to a rooftop bar before the show, and we got calamari, we got a flatbread, and we got some sort of tuna thing. But the calamari, he made a comment that the crust, the breading kept falling off.
Yeah.
Now, is there a technique, like when you make fried calamari,
right,
should the breading stay on and not fall off?
It should. They're probably, I don't know what they did, but if the trick with calamari is you got to have a fryolator dedicated to it because you got to fry it at a higher temperature than you're frying everything else. Most fryolators, stay between 350 and 375 degrees. Calamari, you got to do it at about 4 1/4. And you got to constantly strain the oil because it gets dark pretty quick, at that level. I just dust it with a little bit of a mixture of rice flour and a little bit of cornmeal. Very, very.
Somebody good. Once told me, and I don't know if it's an old wives' tale, but they soak the calamari before.
Milk, buttermilk, whatever. Yeah, I do that.
Gotcha.
But it's they probably have too much in the basket. If it's crowded in there, it gets all kind of muddled up and then they cling to each other. And then, you know, what happens is when they cling, that part of the breading doesn't get fully cooked.
Now, when you're eating calamari, fried calamari, are you an aioli guy or a marinara?
I don't eat a lot of it, but I use it at Amano, it's an Italian restaurant, right? So we do fried calamari. But I serve it with lemon and roasted garlic aioli.
Gotcha. I mean, it's very trendy now to have, Thai chili and stuff like that.
Yeah, it comes in a bottle, you know, so it's easy. You know, most people just buy the bottle.
So let's jump ahead to seasonal. So obviously here we are, warm weather, people barbecuing. I'm finding more and more there's multiple types of outdoor cooking apparatus.
Right.
You have anything from pizza ovens to Blackstones, which is just a griddle, mm-hmm. and traditional barbecues.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're doing the different things that you do, do you do traditional grilling or do you use a Blackstone or?
No, I mean, well, you know, I just did a barbecue for 1,100 people, which is an adventure. I don't recommend it for the faint of heart because it's quite an operation. But it came off flawlessly, if I do say so myself. But we had like 10 grills, 10, you know, 6-8 foot grills out there, you know. So we, you know, when I do something like that, we need a lot of firepower. You know, I'm not going to buy these, you know, the stuff that you would use in your home. I don't know too much about that stuff.
Because, I know it's the quality grill depends on what the BTUs, which I guess is the measurement of heat.
The heat measurement, yeah. But, I'm sure they're all fine. I mean, I think you just have to, you know, kind of assess how much grilling you're going to do. I mean, you know, my friend Dave, you know, he grills in the middle of the winter. That's all he does, you know. Or if you're a party thrower, you know what I mean, you're probably going to need a little more, you know, firepower for that. I seen this thing, I was at somebody's house, they call it the egg or whatever, this green egg thing.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's, you know, what the deal is with it. I guess you can close it and it gets hot, but, you know, all the grills are like that. So
let me ask you this. There's all sorts of apparatus or tools to use on the grill these days. Cooking fish on a grill seems hard to do. Fish is usually flaky.
Yeah.
If that's the right description. And would seem to, for grilling purposes, fall apart. So then I believe I've seen people do plank cooking to be able to cook fish, either a piece of, you know, lack of a better term, plywood, or they use
cedar.
Cedar, right. Yeah. You know, like 2x4s. So what's your take on traditional flaky fish on a grill?
There's certain fish that shouldn't be grilled without. You know, they have those things now. They got handles on them, and they're two matching. They look like tennis rackets almost.
Yes, like a cage.
Right, so you put the fish on that. That'll hold it together. There's certain fish that you can use, like swordfish you can grill, you know, whole bronzino you could probably get away with, tuna you can grill,
now,
salmon you can grill, you know, the meatier fish.
Some of these things, do you wrap it in tin foil and tent it?
Well,
like?
That's not grilling, that's steaming at that point, you know. So, yeah, you know, you got to stay away from the really flaky, milder, like flounder. If you put a fillet of flounder on a grill, you're going to have a mess on your hands, you know. So unless you have one of those, you know, cage things or whatever they call them. But if you go to Greek restaurants, you know, you always see that bronzino or the fish that comes out almost butterflied, it looks like. They always cook them on those things, you know, most of them cook them on those things, you know. Because it's easier to, you know, you just take it off, you know, you get the handle there, you know, you're not spatulating the thing or whatever. But
So I had a friend that went out. He said he was going fishing. Turned out he went clamming. Uh-huh. Came back with a bunch of clams.
Right.
Claims that he throws them on the grill to open them.
Yeah, you can do that.
And then scoops them out and then dices them for either, you know, like a linguine and clam sauce, or chops them up to make baked clams or whatever. What's your thoughts on on like clams and oysters, and then you go to the other extreme. I guess you have scallops and shrimp. Some people cook the shrimp on a skewer.
Well, it's easier, you know, because you just flip the skewer over, you get five at a time or six at a time. Scallops are good on a grill. I mean, if anything like meaty like that, you can grill.
But when you're talking about scallops, you're not talking about bay scallops on the... No, cause
I'm talking about the sea scallops.
That's like pencil erasers.
Yeah, they come, you know, a count per pound, you know, when you buy scallops. Like, I use under 10, so it's less than 10 per pound. 10-20s... and 20-30s are the ones that they generally sell to the public in the stores, and they're fine. You can grill them, you know. I prefer to saute them. I don't really love grilling them, you know. I think it's fine. It gives them a nice little smokiness, but I like sauteing them better. I think they
What's your thoughts on a salmon steak? A nice salmon burger.
I personally don't eat them.
That's something that would be tough, like a crab cake or something like that, to cook on a grill.
Yeah, no, you can't. There's certain things like salmon. I make salmon burgers, you know, because what happens is when I get a piece of salmon in, like let's say I get the whole salmon, I fillet it. You have that belly meat there, and you can't really use it, you know, on a piece of salmon. So I cut that belly out, and I save them. And then, you know, when I get enough of them, I'll just make salmon burgers, you know. But you got to use a saute pan for that. I mean, I have a griddle, like a plancha. You know, it's about, I don't know, 4 feet by 4 feet or something like 4 feet by three, whatever. And so it's, you know, you just a little oil and you put them both sides. Same thing with like black bean burgers I make, you know, sometimes like for the vegetarians, you know. We used to buy those Impossible Burgers. You ever see those?
Yeah, you know, I find them to be, here we go, salty.
Well, did you ever read the ingredients list?
Mud.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Fungi.
There's nothing edible in them. It's like insane. You know what I mean? I'm reading this thing. I'm like, oh.
So wait. So let's think about this. That stuff came out like 5-6 years ago, and what do you think the evolution? It seemed to have a lot of steam moving forward. And I think it's sort of stalled out now, right?
Well, yeah, it was. I think people read the label. That's probably what happened. But the bottom line is, you know, if you're going to be a vegetarian, this is what annoys me about vegetarians sometimes. And, you know, a lot of good people, I have nothing against them really. But there's two things. One is, if you invite a vegetarian to your house, right, they expect you to have vegetables. Okay, fine. You're a vegetarian, I'll accommodate you. You go to a vegetarian's house, I'm a steak eater. You think they're going to accommodate you? They don't. They don't reciprocate, you know? And the other thing is, like, it's like they want their food to taste like non-vegetarian food. It's like hilarious. If you're a vegetarian, eat the vegetables. I mean, I get it. You know, they're gorgeous and on their own and flavorful, this, that, and the other thing. Why would you want a vegetable burger to taste like beef, you know what I mean, if you don't like beef? Why get fake bacon, you know, if you don't want to eat it?
It's funny you say that. So growing up in a Jewish family, I knew about kosher and non-kosher, is you can't eat dairy with meat or whatever. So my dad had an office. He was an importer on Canal Street.
Oh, yeah.
And
Ratner's.
Yeah, but in his area, there was, for whatever reason, a dairy restaurant, which was fascinating. It was, I guess, a Jewish culture type thing.
Bagel Boss is like that, right?
I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I made the mistake of one time going in there and asking for...
Oh, well, yeah, they're kosher.
Yeah, kosher, right.
But what in the dairy restaurant, it's funny, like, you can get, like, stuffed cabbage.
Right.
But it's not made with meat.
Beef, yeah.
Your favorite, chopped liver, is not made with liver. They call it mock.
Yeah, they put it with walnuts or something.
Yeah eggplant or whatever it is. Yeah. But that was always interesting that... There was a purpose, though, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I know that I had a cousin that was allergic to fish, so she couldn't eat your other favorite, gefilte fish.
That's not a fish. That's a mess.
I think my mom made something that was similar, though, but it was, you're going to laugh, it was made out of chicken.
Gefilte chicken.
Yeah. It was mock gefilte fish.
That's hilarious. But
so... again, sometimes there's a reason, but yeah, it, you know, In today's world, yes, there's a lot of things that are made to taste like something else.
Yeah, just listen, tough it out. You know, you're a vegetarian. Okay, fine. Wave the flag and walk the walk. You know?
So talking about barbecuing and outdoor cooking, vegetables. Again, if you're doing sausage and peppers, you don't do that really on a grill. It's got to be on a griddle or a pan or something.
Well, you can cook sausages on a grill. You
the sausage, but yeah. Not the peppers.
No, the peppers you're not going to cook on.
So yeah, I'm talking about.
You can actually grill peppers, but you know to make the
it's a half a pepper. It's not diced peppers stuff
you
or
can't
shredded.
Do, julienne peppers on a grill that fall through the grates.
But there are vegetables. Obviously, you can cook. Asparagus goes very well on the grill. We had portobello mushroom the other for our 4th of July.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. We cheated a little bit. We took out a local restaurant closed. Oh, a lot of local restaurants are closing.
Amen.
I apologize for giggling, but it's just ridiculous that it's happening. But Piccolo in Belmore.
I saw that,
Been around forever.
That was started
closed.
Like in the
70s. And so. It's funny because we had some vegetarians, and I'm not sure I actually came through the right way. We got a tray of eggplant parmesan, and I'm not sure if vegans really eat cheese.
No.
So that might have not, because we got chicken parmesan and we got eggplant parmesan. And then Carrie came up with the idea of doing some portobello mushrooms, which were delightful, a little bland, I will admit, and I found that I had to do a little balsamic glaze for my leftovers, but it was really tasty. It was fun. We had some fresh corn. Corn again. I'm always amazed at how stupid I am, because I used to. Again, I'm the king of microwaves. So I used to shuck my corn.
Right.
And wrap it in a wet paper towel and put it into the microwave. And 4 minutes, then let it sit to sort of steam a little bit.
Yeah.
Or even put it in a refrigerator overnight at that point. And it's delightful, especially this time of year. The corn is so sweet and wonderful. But now I know that I can just take the corn in the husk and put it into the microwave. Yeah. And it accomplishes the same thing.
Yeah, it's like a wet towel.
And this time of year, also, I'm a little lazy this year. I bought all sorts of tomato plants, and they never made it into the ground. They're all in their pots still, but they're all flowering and providing me with tomatoes. And I got these orange tomatoes that are so delightful,
Yeah. No, this is the time of year. I mean, I'll serve a tomato salad now until the end of September, and then they kind of go away. You know, you can get some hothouse stuff that's pretty good. You know, this time, these days you can find some. But you know, I always rail against the tomato salads that every steakhouse sells in January with these white cottony tomatoes that are terrible. You know, and
summer though, I go to watermelon feta.
That's what's around it. This is the thing about
cucumber salad.
Yeah, this is the thing about eating local. I mean, this is what everybody's striving for is eat what's available now. I mean, the corn doesn't get any better than it is right now. And you'll go right through till about the second week of September, and then the corn gets iffy. But tomatoes right through September.
Can you cook a cauliflower steak on the grill?
Yeah, you could, but you're gonna have to finish it in the oven. So if you go all the way on a grill, the outside will be black by the time the inside gets done. But I'm getting back to the vegetarian thing. I kind of eat like that. I eat a lot of vegetables, and I celebrate them for what they are. I mean, every couple of months it changes. What's being grown, and it's fabulous. And so, my unsolicited advice to vegetarians is eat the vegetables. What are you worried about trying to make it taste like bacon or whatever? Just, eat broccoli. It's supposed to taste like broccoli,
But when you do these different vegetables and stuff, do they have to be seasoned or you like them or natural?
No, season them, there's, I serve a lot of my vegetables with sautéed shallots. I'll start with sautéed shallots. My uppers are giving me trouble these days. But you know, and you know, with green beans or something, I'll throw them in and saute them with the shallots, and it just gives a boost of flavor. You know, a lot of people like garlic, and I kind of shy away from that a little bit. You know, but people like garlic in their spinach, and you know, I find at some of the restaurants they have that bottled garlic that's, you know, already come diced, and there's a tablespoon in, you know, an order of spinach, and to me it tastes terrible. You know, all you need is one clove, and throw the clove in there, you know, and it kind of perfumes the, you know, the vegetable without overwhelming it, you know.
Are you a cooked vegetable, a cooked fruit guy?
I like grilled fruit, yeah. You know, we do a lot of that for dessert, you know, grilled peaches or plums. You know, I have a plancha, you know, we'll use those, especially this time of year. I mean, I got peaches the other day that were just insanely good. There's a place that I go to once in a while called Christina's over in East Norwich. It's in a little shopping center over there. And they have great produce, you know, it's... they're kind of cognizant of the seasonality, and I guess most of them are the department stores. I mean, the grocery stores. But they always have ripe fruit there, which is nice, you know. So a lot of times you go to, you know, if you go to a Stop and Shop, you get a peach, you know. If you threw it at somebody, you'd be prosecuted for murder, you know, and things. So I think that, you know, I guess Trader Joe's, I don't really shop.
You should look at my mother's shopping list. I alternate with my sister on, you know, taking care of my mom's food stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And the shopping list had ripe peach.
Yeah, well, yeah, who wants a hard peach?
You know? Not an easy thing to accomplish.
No, I know. That's why I'm touting Christina's. You know, you go there. I mean, these peaches, to me, I judge a peach by, you know, like, do I have to wash my arms? You know what I mean? After it's over, because, you know, bite it and the juice is flowing down your elbows. And, you know, it's, that's summer to me, you know.
So I guess the ultimate for Tom Shawdell would be having a juicy lobster with butter swirling around his face.
In the beard, yeah.
And finishing with either a peach, plum, or a nectarine that's dripping all over you.
You know, there was a dessert that was all the rage in the 40s and 50s, peach melba. And I remember when I started working in restaurants in the late 60s, we always had a peach melba, and it was cans of these things. You know, we'd take the canned peach that was in the sugar water or whatever, they keep it in and put it on ice cream with some raspberry sauce, off you go, you know. But, you
know.
That
was a staple, like, you know, I can't talk.
Really?
Go figure. But that was a typical dessert at a dinner party or whatever, you know. You go to a business meeting.
Yeah, they all had them, you know. But if you take, you know, if now, you know, there's all kinds of flavored gelatos and stuff that are really good. But, you know, the good old vanilla, I mean, Titian vanilla or something with peach gelato, you know, and you grill the peach and you make real raspberry syrup, you know, with like real raspberries, and then you use the fresh fruit. It's fabulous. It's one of those desserts. And I would throw a biscotti in there just for a little crunch, you know. It's quintessential
dessert.
It's
so funny you say that, because Carrie's new thing, she was spoiled. She got taken out to Tao on the West Coast.
Right.
And they have a dessert called an affogato, which I was never familiar, but essentially it's...
Well, I forgot what it was in it.
it's espresso... with, I guess,
vanilla ice cream.
A biscotte.
Yeah, an ice cream.
And ice cream.
Yeah, yeah.
And she just loves that. But it's sometimes very hard to get all the components together, specifically the biscotte.
Well, you know, I tell you a quick funny story. I serve affogato at Amano, right? And it's got to be done at the table, right? You go with the ice cream, and you get to the table, and you take the espresso, and you pour it over the ice cream. You don't do it in the kitchen while you're waiting for the other desserts to come, because now you just got a puddle.
Wait. So you're definitely spying on me. So I said we went down to the beach the other night, Carrie and I. So she was coming from her house, and I was coming from the studio.
Uh-huh.
So she goes, meet me by Carvel in Wantagh.
Oh, love it.
So I leave my car there. Uh-huh. I park it, and I go in, and I get her favorite. Soft serve chocolate with hot fudge.
There you go.
But like, she's not there for 5 minutes or so.
Uh,
I'm the fool standing in front of Carvel with this melting
105 degrees
soft serve ice cream with the hot fudge.
Chocolate soup.
Go figure.
You know, Carvel's my guilty pleasure, man. There's a place out in Riverhead that I pass when I'm out there all the time called Dairyland. And it's just, it's like a Carvel without the, you know, without the name. And they have these great flavors. They make their own ice cream there. They have these great flavors, moose knuckle and all this other crazy stuff, right? But I'm a soft serve sucker, man. I just, you know,
is that on the north side of whatever road it's
no,
on?
No, it's on the south side of Main Road out there, 25. Just before you get to that big intersection where 105 is, just west of that. But I take the kids there all the time, you know, and, you know, they get, you know, my grandson, he wants, I don't know, Batman ice cream or Superman, whatever the hell it is, and she gets something. I'm just the soft serve
swirl. I'd love to be there. Paco, what do you want?
Yeah, I want a twist. Give me a twist, vanilla chocolate, you know. Would you like a small one? No.
So do you remember, because we're of the age, I swear, if it wasn't Mr. Softy, it was somebody else. They used to make a cone that had two circles on the top.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It wasn't a twist.
No, I know. You had one or the other. Yeah, you get a vanilla and a chocolate. Yeah. Yeah, I was, I'm the cone guy. I don't know. This, the cone to me is a bleh, you know.
And obviously the youth of today are not as qualified at eating soft serve ice cream as we were, because when I go to Stu Leonard's, they put the cone in some sort of plastic housing that extends the circumference of the ice cream melting, so it melts into this reservoir rather than down your arm.
Is this ice cream physics you're going through? Yeah,
yeah.
You know, this is crazy. Yeah, you know, it used to be so simple. A Good Humor guy, a Judy Ann truck used to come around Clark Place neighborhood, and we'd all run out there and get
I can't remember
ice.
Anything. How come I remember Steve the Good Humor man?
I don't know. I mean, I'm the same way, you know. I'm the oracle of useless information, right? I can remember stuff. Crest has been shown to be an effective decay preventive dentifrice that can be of significant value when used in a conscientiously applied program of oral hygiene and regular professional care. That was a Crest commercial in like the late 50s,
that's
early
60s. That's so funny, because I think it was some contemporary artist, Ariana Grande or one of these different performers, Olivia Rodrigo, they know the or Zendaya, they know the line from SVU, Law and Order SVU,
yeah.
You know, and again it just pours out of your mouth.
Yeah, 617-731-5887. That was my girlfriend in Boston, 1971. I remember stuff. FLA 3911, my grandmother's phone number in Flushing back in the 50s. And I don't know what time I put the short ribs in the oven. I said, what time are they supposed to come out? I don't know. Check them. You know what I mean? I can remember stuff that's absolutely useless. And the stuff that's important, right out the door. Can't remember a thing. It's hilarious. Well, listen, I do remember we have to go. So we're going to, I remember Tom's Three Keys to Life.
Well, I'm still, before you get into that, I'm just hoping that this show actually airs this weekend, because we're recording on a Friday. My staff has summer Fridays, which means half a day. So there's a half a chance that our listeners will get to be listening to this show this weekend.
This is a half-assed show here. All right, we're going to close it with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which is life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And congratulations again, Harley and the girls, the Riverhead District Champions.
Come on now, everybody, get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, significant other. Bring all your pals. There's always something smoking at Smoking Al.
It's spring and summer is right behind. It's time for Smoking Al's party catering menu. Make your next party at Smoking One with Al's Ribs, barbecue meats, chicken, appetizers, and a whole lot more. Try Al's new fantasy platters in the comfort of your backyard or one of Al's party packages. The weather is heating up and the party is smoking. Smoking Al's, Massapequa Park. For details, call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.